And welcome back to the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. Joining us now on the show, our weekly guest, Will Carroll. He's from BleacherReport.com. He is at Injury Expert on Twitter. He knows all about the sports injuries across the league. Will, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. You know, it's kind of crazy this week. Talking about injuries is the most negative thing in the NFL. So I guess I feel a little less grim than I normally do.
Yeah, normally we have you on and we're like afraid to get away from the actual game action. This time, we're excited to just talk about something other than what's been going on with Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice and all this nonsense going on off of the field. So let's get right into it. Something that's going to impact the Chiefs this weekend. Jamaal Charles. He's got a high ankle sprain. Now, some people are calling it a mild high ankle sprain. When you heard this news on Monday, was this good news? Was this bad news? What did you make of this?
Well, certainly mild is better than severe, so I guess you can say that's good. But there's more to the story, Brandon. What we have here is not just a high ankle sprain. It's a recurrence of a high ankle sprain. If you go back and watch what the athletic trainers and doctors were doing, when they were checking him, they actually had to cut away the tape on his ankle, which is typical. You do that, it's fairly easy to tape an ankle back up. But one of the things I noticed going back and looking, that tape was very, very high. It wasn't just ankle tape. It was up nearly halfway up his shin. And that made me think, was there a previous high ankle sprain? And the answer, yes. Not exactly sure when it occurred, probably sometime during the preseason. He's had foot and ankle problems before, so this isn't a big surprise, but it tells us that he's been able to play through it and that this recurred. They were worried about it. They wanted to make sure it didn't get any worse, so they took him off the field. Now, do I think he'll play in week three? No, I don't. I think they're going to be more careful with it. I think they're going to try to manage this and make sure he doesn't miss a significant amount of time. So Nile Davis is going to get one more look to see if he can continue to be productive as a really good number two.
Okay, so I played basketball whenever I was little, and I know whenever you sprain your ankle once, it seems like it keeps happening over and over again. Is that something that Jamaal Charles is at risk for here?
Well, it's not just at risk. This is what's happening. He's already had at least one high ankle sprain, and that ligament in the syndesmosis, which is the joint in between the tibia and the fibula, doesn't have a lot of movement. It's a very strong and stiff ligament. It's already being stretched and torn. So, yeah, it is more likely. Ligaments, just like everything else in your body, will heal itself with scar. And that's anywhere between 60 and 75% as strong as the natural fibers. So, you know, that ligament is never going to be as strong. Remember Cam Newton earlier in the preseason had to have surgery to fix his ligaments in his ankle because they were so stretched out. They were just loose. So they had to basically tighten things up in there. That's not the case here with Charles. His isn't so significant. But, yeah, it is a recurrent problem that he's going to have to watch out for and that Rick Burkholder is going to have to keep a close watch on.
So how long do these things typically keep players out? Is this something that's going to be a one-week thing? Or I saw some reports in the past it's been 4 to 6 weeks for something like this. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah. No, we're not looking at 4 to 6. This is mild, and because he's been able to play through it previously, that usually means they're closer to coming back. So, again, I don't think they'll test it in week three, but I think, you know, at that point it becomes very much day-to-day, even week-to-week. Week four is very, very plausible.
Okay, I'm sure Chiefs fans are going to really enjoy hearing that. Once again, we're joined by Will Carroll. He's with BleacherReport.com. He's at Injury Expert on Twitter. So last year, sticking with the Chiefs, they didn't lose really anybody of note to injury. This year, they've already lost three starters for the season, a couple others for multiple week injuries. Is there anything that you could see as a background, something that could have indicated we would see something like this, or are these truly just random injuries and it just happens to teams sometimes?
I hate calling them random, but you are going to see these. What you've seen is, you know, a couple ankle sprains. You've seen two in the same game, Achilles strains, and that's just unusual. You know, we've seen Achilles strains. Is there anything you can do to prevent that? Unfortunately, not really. So, you know, when we look around the game and people say injuries are just a part of the game, that's true. There's going to be some level that you can't prevent. The trick is that over time, the bad luck should even out. But when you see there are some teams that are really good at it, some teams that are really bad at it, and beyond the luck of the game, if you look at 3 and 5 year trends, you'll see who's really good at keeping it as low as possible and who's bad. Now, Rick Burkholder, of course, the medical staff coming over from Philadelphia, you kind of, it's new players, it's new facilities, it's not 100% the same staff, but Rick was great when he was with Philadelphia. He's very comfortable with Andy Reid. I think he's going to continue to be good, even though we only have one year and a couple weeks to go on for data for this team.
Okay, moving on to something that'll implicate or have huge implications for fantasy teams across America this week. Mark Ingram, he had surgery on his hand. Coaches are saying he's a week-to-week guy right now. How do trainers know when he's going to be able to come back, and what kind of a timetable do you typically see with something like this?
Well, there's three things you're going to watch for. First, he's got to be cleared by his surgeon. They've got to say everything's stable, that he can handle playing football. So that could come, you know, in a matter of days. Beyond that, there are two things they're going to have to focus on. First, they're going to have to protect that hand. Can he put some sort of guard over it? Is he going to have to wear a cast? You know, what can they find to keep that hand from getting re-injured when he takes an inevitable hit? The other thing is he's got to have grip strength. It's got to be 100%. Because he's running between the tackles, there are guys that are going to be trying to strip the ball. And if we all know how important ball control is in the modern NFL, if he doesn't have full grip strength, then he's not the same guy he was, and they'll have to consider playing Kyrie Robinson a little bit longer. So this is one that literally is week to week. I will be stunned if he's back before week six. There's just too much going on here for this to happen. Now, keep your eye on Maurice Jones-Drew, who had a very similar problem, had very similar surgery, missed week two. They're saying he's possible for week three, but I'm hearing he's going to be out at least until week four, probably beyond that.
Okay, and once again, we are joined by Will Carroll. He's with BleacherReport.com. He's the sports injury expert for Bleacher Report. He's on Twitter, at Injury Expert. What other injuries this week kind of piqued your interest? What other injuries do you have your eye on as we move forward into this young NFL season?
Well, of course, we all saw the gruesome injury to Robert Griffin last week. What looked like an ankle dislocation was actually not an ankle dislocation. It was what we call a subtalar dislocation. It didn't happen in the classic ankle sense, the joint between the foot and the tibia fibula. It happened under the talus bone, the bone at the top of the foot that actually meets the ankle. It's not nearly as bad as what we thought. He's going to be in a walking boot / cast for the next couple weeks, but it is conceivable that he could be back in as soon as a month. I would say it's going to be more like 6 to 8 weeks that we'll see him somewhere around, you know, on the practice field somewhere around week 8 to 10 and back on the field potentially by week 11 or 12 for a fantasy football playoff run. So definitely watching that one to see how Griffin responds to what could have been a devastating injury.
Yeah, that's great.
The other one I'm watching is one that's – yeah, the other one that I'm watching is really confusing right now. And this is literally a – you know, sometimes we say day-to-day or week-to-week. This one's minute-to-minute. Carson Palmer has a nerve issue that's – we're learning little bits and pieces of it. Basically, the nerve has been impinged, and it's gone dead. He's called it asleep. He's called it dead. He can't make the throws. It wasn't far off. He can throw the ball. It's not like his arm's just hanging there limp. It's just not as strong. And now, yesterday, he said he doesn't have normal grip strength, which is also going to affect what he can do on a football field. Now, you know, nerves can just essentially wake up. You know, if you've ever had your foot fall asleep or sat funny and then you get up and you're like, oh, my God, my leg's just dead. That's kind of what he has in his arm. But for an NFL quarterback, they can't play without full arm strength and full grip strength. So this is one that there's not really anything anybody can do. They're going to do some treatment. They're going to try to get everything going. But until that wakes up, yeah, there's not really anything anybody can do. So he could be out this week. He could be out for a month. This could be the end of his season, and we just don't know.
Wow, that's interesting. And once again, we are joined by Will Carroll, BleacherReport.com. I wanted to get to something with this new drug policy that the NFL implemented this week. The HGH testing, they've been talking about it for years now. From a medical standpoint, what is the problem with the use of HGH in the NFL?
It's illegal.
Other than that, though, like from a purely medical standpoint, is there a drawback to players using HGH to heal?
The drawback would be that it doesn't work. You know, if HGH was this miracle healing substance, doctors would be using it. You know, if you went and had knee surgery, if your grandma had hip surgery, if somebody tore a muscle playing, you know, pickup basketball, doctors would just be injecting this all over the place. We've had hundreds of studies on HGH. HGH is really, really good at one thing, helping short kids grow. We all have it in our body to some extent, but at a very low extent once we get past puberty because, you know, let's face it, we don't grow after that. So, you know, this is one, it's the red herring of drug testing. They're going to spend a ton of money. They're going to take blood tests of, get this, 40 players. Five players over eight teams. 24 teams are going to go without drug, at least HGH testing of any kind. So this is nothing more than a token to say they're doing something for a drug that nobody is taking. To me, this is the pinnacle of cynicism because it's a drug that doesn't do anything and nobody's taking. So why even bother?
So why are we talking about it so much? I hear a ton of discussion about this through the media, through the NFL. They've been pushing for this for 3 years now. And from what you just said, it sounds like, first of all, it's not a huge problem. Second of all, it doesn't really do much. So why are we discussing this so much?
Because people have heard of it. Okay. You know, if I say we've got to watch out for SGS-009, that's not going to get a whole lot of worry in the media. But this is a new drug that's actually out there and people are using and we're seeing real muscular gains. It actually does things at the cellular level. If I said, you know, that CERA is becoming a problem for receivers, this is the drug that one of the drugs that Lance Armstrong admitted to using. It actually increases your oxygen capacity and makes you have more endurance. They don't test for that in the NFL. Why not? Are you telling me that having better oxygen capacity isn't going to help players in a sport that does have a cardio level? Certainly not to the extent of cycling. But, hey, just watch some of those linemen get gassed. Watch a running back after they've gone on a long run. If they had better oxygen capacity, they would be better players. And if you don't think it's being used, you're crazy. But they're not testing for it. HGH just gets a lot of media attention because, I don't know.
Because of baseball?
What's that?
Because of baseball? Is that because we link it with the doping?
No, because it was hardly used in baseball as well. You know, with you can use HGH, and there are some studies that show their gains when it's in a stack. You know, people don't just take a steroid. They take two or three steroids in a stack. And if you add HGH to that, there's some evidence of gains. But that's mostly anecdotal because, let's face it, we don't just take somebody and shoot them up full of stuff for a study. It's really tough to do human studies on this. But bodybuilders are perfectly willing to be guinea pigs and will go out there and inject themselves full of this stuff. But if this is the case, if it's only good in a stack, we're going to catch people for the other stuff. You know, if you're taking testosterone and two or three other, you know, Duraball and some of those, you're going to catch them for those. We're already testing for those. So why even bother with the HGH?
Interesting. Okay, and the last thing I have here for you about the NFL's new drug policy is the amphetamine, specifically the two things that we've been hearing about the most over the offseason, Molly and Adderall. Are those tested for underneath this new policy? And what does this all mean whenever it comes to amphetamine?
Yeah, yes and no. Molly itself, which is the drug MDMA, this gets complex because what people call Molly and what's, you know, technically Molly are two different things. If MDMA is not tested for, it is not a banned substance. The problem is that a lot of times what's sold as Molly on the street is cut with amphetamines, cut with powdered amphetamines, cut with Adderall, cut with all sorts of different things. So, you know, if you're taking one thing that you don't think is banned and it's got something else in it, you're certainly going to be at risk. That's why athletes in any sport have what's called ultimate responsibility. Whatever you take, whether you think it's good or not, whether it's a street drug, whether it's a supplement, if it's not on the blessed list, which is the supplements, they say these are clear. These are made in a facility. These are stored properly. We will allow you to take these. Then you're absolutely at risk. So, you know, the situation with Wes Welker, which is probably the most famous case of this, evidently, you know, he tested positive for Adderall, which there's a specific test for that specific drug because normally you test for metabolites. You take something, it metabolizes in the body. The metabolites come out as part of the urine. And in the case of several stimulants, part of the drug comes out as well. And so the test itself can specifically state this is Adderall. You took Adderall. And if you don't have a prescription and if you don't have a therapeutic use exemption, you're busted. Now, they've changed whether or not this is in the season. It's a performance enhancer for obvious reasons. It's a stimulant. Off season, well, you're just on your own, so you're not enhancing your performance. So they're calling it a substance of abuse. I think they're splitting hairs, but hey, so be it.
Interesting. We will be definitely paying more and more attention to that as the season goes along. He's Will Carroll. He's with BleacherReport.com. He is at Injury Expert on Twitter. Always has the greatest information, the latest information for us here on the Morning Blitz. Will, thanks so much for joining us today, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Coming up next, is Matty Mock as impressive on film as he is by the numbers? We'll discuss that. Plus, is this the most talented defensive line in Pekel's time here at Mizzou? We'll do it all with Christopher Smith of Saturday Down South next on the Morning Blitz, KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.org.